Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone, or in today's case, people from the entertainment world. Today's program is a little different from the regular fare. Yes, it involves a new release of a CD, but the master tapes are something like 40 years old. Prog rock was not a genre that really gripped the US as it did the UK and certain other parts of Europe, but it did exist. And the Philadelphia-based band Wax stands great testament to that fact. I'm joined today by two of the members, Rick Levy and Rob Hyman. Rick and Rob, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Simon.
Good to be with you.
Hello, Rob. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, likewise.
Do you guys talk together very often?
We hadn't. Go ahead, Rob.
Right. It had been a long time, Rick. I'm still in the Philadelphia area all these years, and then Rick has been living in Florida, so there's a geographical distance. And then we go in and out of touch, but this release and this music has really bonded us back together very strongly.
The backstory, Simon, was that Bo Jones, the original bass player, Bo and I are originally from Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia, and we went back to the mid-60s in a garage band in a little town called Allentown, Pennsylvania, a garage band called The Limits. And then when I went to university in Philadelphia, where Rob and the rest of the band also went, Bo was actually in the U.S. Army, but living off base, and he could live with us. So he was the bass player in Wax. But when Bo contracted, was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer just about a year ago, a little more than a year ago. And when that happened, I guess I just mustered all my years of you know, bringing people together and organizing and said, you know, I got to get all the Wax guys and, you know, have kind of a love fest for Bo. And that's what started the initial reconnection of all the original members of Wax. And we can get into a little later, Rob, you know, one of us can tell you a little bit about the lost tape, the discovery of this kind of miraculous discovery of this lost tape we all forgot about. And then, you know, how another pal had a label that happens to be distributed by EMI. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool story. Bo unfortunately passed away a week before the release. So it was kind of a bittersweet thing, but you know the cool thing about music, Simon, it keeps everybody alive.
Oh, indeed. Rob, are you happy about, you know, getting this CD out after 40 years?
Oh, I'm ecstatic. We all are. I mean, we had a wonderful brief run, but we burned very hot. When this band was formed, I think in 1969, we immediately, within I think a month or two, we were opening for groups like Chicago and the Birds and other big, we played a great venue in Philadelphia called the Electric Factory, which was our version of the Fillmore East or a legendary rock hall, you know, The Who, Hendrix, Elton John, everybody played this room. We had, within months, we were opening for Van Morrison and John Mayall and just playing in the area, very, very quick rise to fame and just a lot of talent in the band. And then we, for various reasons, by 71, we were offered a record deal. We started to make a record, an album in New York. the record company went bankrupt, and shortly thereafter we just went kind of our separate ways into other musical pursuits. Everyone did pursue, almost everyone from the band pursued successfully music, but we just didn't do it together. And as Rick said, there was this tape. Well, we had a number of tapes, but over the years they were kind of missing. And one of our managers, who ended up being in very successful as well, John Kaladner, in the music business, and doing A&R, was in California and found a box of tapes, which he sent to me, and we discovered a live studio session that we had done, just straight live. I mean, live to two tracks.
Yep.
In a studio. And it's almost an hour of music, almost flawlessly played, and it's quite tricky technically, and a lot of different styles. Everyone in the band wrote. Everyone had different ideas and influences, and I think in an hour or two we recorded almost all first takes of this music that we now have put out on CD. The album is called Melted, and though the band Melted, Wax lives on, and this music is virtually 40 years old. It was recorded in 1971.
Yeah.
So it was quite remarkable to hear it and to put it out.
I love prog rock. I'm old, you know, so I remember.
Me too.
You know, prog never really caught the attention of the U.S. folks like it did in Europe, but I was listening to one of your tracks, On and On, and to me, it personifies prog. In fact, would you mind if I played it?
Oh, please.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is Wax, On and On. I think it's a great song, but I
do too.
Yeah, right.
That's great. That's Rob playing keyboards on. He was the keyboardist. Rob Hyman did all the keyboards with Wax, and I was the guitar. I was guitarist. Bo Jones was the bassist, and Rick Chertoff was the drummer, and David Kagan was the lead vocalist. An amazing vocalist, amazing singer.
Simon, what was your comment? I was curious.
Okay, I received the MP3, and just had to listen to it, and my first thought was, hell, they've sent me the wrong thing. This is an outtake from The Who and Tommy.
Well, okay. Big influence. Yeah.
Yes, I was going to ask you that, you know, who were your musical influences?
I think if you just open up the book of 60s rock and go down the list, then pretty much any band. There were so many, and really, as Rick said, there were five of us that all contributed and wrote, and without editing, you know, just every. There are literally on this album, you know, 10-minute epic songs, mini suites with like five or six different, you know, time signatures within a couple of beats. So I think we were listening to anything and everything, you know. For me, I grew up in Connecticut, actually. But like all of us in this country in the late 60s, mid 60s, the British invasion. Thank you very much, Simon, for your part. You know, that was, I think every kid in America in 1964 wanted to be, you know, English and play like the Beatles. It's simple as that. And Rolling Stones as well for me. I really like the rockier stuff, even Dave Clark 5. And then it moved into progressive. We all met and played in late 60s in Philadelphia, which was a really happening musical scene, just like in the Village or San Francisco, maybe not quite as famous and notorious as some of those other bands, but it was an incredible scene with great clubs, very creative radio, by the way. WMMR was still around as one of the country's longest running rock stations, and many other DJs and stations that are still, a lot of the DJs are still in satellite music now in the States, and groundbreaking radio. So we heard everything. I mean, remember Fairport Convention to The Who, to Zeppelin, to Hendrix, to folk music. Rick, you can jump in. I'm sure your influences.
Well, you know, I mean, as you hear, and as you'll hear in the next song, I know, because you mentioned, so you'll hear more influence like gospel and like the band. You know,
Elton
a little
John.
More blue, yeah, Elton John, and more of a bluesy kind of feel. And I guarantee you, when you get the full CD, you'll probably call me back and say, let's do another one, because there is so much on here. And I got to tell you, you know, after Bo passed away, we took a big, deep breath, and somehow we came to the decision that we were going to reunite and play at Bo's memorial. We had a big music celebration, and the four remaining members got together, and Rob's longtime musical partner from the Hooters, Eric Bazillion, we didn't even have to ask him. He said he'd play bass. So we had one rehearsal in 40 years, the first time we were together, and we worked
right.
up four songs, and it was, to me, besides being very emotional, musically, it was really outstanding. It was kind of scary, actually, because it was not, as you could hear, this is not, you know, bits and pieces are glad all over. This is not three-chord rock and roll, you know. So it took some work, but, man, it's a joyful, bittersweet, this whole Wax thing is a joyful and bittersweet experience, because Bo's not around, but his gift in leaving us is that he's brought us all back together. And it's amazing. It really is amazing. And we're getting great, great press, great reviews everywhere.
It is odd the way that, you know, someone moving on brings attention back to, you know, what they achieved. There was a... There was a prog rock band in the UK. I doubt that you've ever heard of them. Barclay James Harvest.
Oh, yeah. I remember
Of
the
course.
Name. Oh, yeah. I remember
Absolutely.
The name, yes.
I have some
yeah.
of their albums.
All right, well...
They didn't do that song. Da, 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 bless the people. Blah, blah, blah. That wasn't them, was it? Or was that the Straws?
That
Maybe
was
that was the Straws.
Straws.
Yeah, okay.
But,
I know the Straws very well. I like Dave Cousins.
Yeah. Well, you know, Philadelphia was very popular. I mentioned Fairport Convention, the Straws, and maybe Barclay James Harvest. Some of those bands, they really did get some attention in this area, and we did hear that music.
Procol Harum? Procol Harum came to the factory, remember? We went to see Procol
sure.
Harum and was like, oh, my God. You know, there it is. You know?
Well, anyway, sad news. On Monday, Woolly of Barclay James Harvest died.
Yeah, it's just, Ooh. You know, it's something you don't expect, and you realize, you know, in this case, one, you said, you know, did you rediscover something? Well, what we rediscovered, because Rob has a great studio in Philadelphia, and he was able to remaster the tape. We couldn't mix anything because it was totally live. It was a two-track stereo tape, so that we couldn't cheat. We couldn't cover up a mistake. But Rob and John, and two other fellows, Paul Hammond and John Sr., did a great remastering job. That we could do a little bit. And what we discovered was that Bo Jones was a genius on the bass guitar, an absolute genius, which you forget over the years, and we couldn't even really hear it in the original version of the tape. But, you know, Rob and his crew did such
right.
a great job
right.
of equalizing and bringing out frequencies. And, man, it's like, wow, you know.
I agree.
Yeah,
and
what
another,
a gift. What a gift. Yeah.
Interesting anecdote to that is the four of us, there were five members. As Rick said, four of us were all in college together at the University of Pennsylvania. And we were your typical late 60s hippies with hair down to our, you know, belts and all kind of facial hair and anything else we could get away with living on our own. Bo Jones had a day job in the U.S. Army and had the clipped hair and the look of somebody in the Army. So he was really the odd man out in our group. And he was also a bit of like a John Entwistle type where he was the strong, silent bass player. We were all very animated and very, you know, giving off the color on stage. Bo would just kind of stand there and play the bass. So he tended to, in my mind, be somewhat understated as a band member. When we rediscovered these tapes, and as Rick said, when we started to remaster and really listen and, in fact, try to enhance the low end, that was one thing we really worked on, was to bring out the bottom and the bass playing. The more we listened, the more we discovered his harmonic and rhythmic touch on the bass was remarkable. He's just one of those bass players that's all over the place playing very inventive, creative lines, as well as singing and writing a lot of the material. He really was an anchor of the band that I didn't realize at the time as much. And as this ordeal went on with him and his illness, the blessing, as Rick said, the bittersweet part was we really came and we met, we talked with him and just listened to some of this stuff and you know, embraced all of his musical genius. He really was a terrific, incredible player. And this album, you know, some 40 years later, we all realized, and as Rick said, when we even got to play it live, it's some very interesting and demanding music, and Bo held it down very strongly.
Yeah, yeah. And another cool connection, Simon, was there was a fellow in college with us, this kid named Arnie Holland, this short Jewish red-haired kid who became a music attorney specifically because we got such a raw deal in our first record deal when, you know, when it went bad. He said, I want to help musicians. And he's always been a good guy in the music business. You know, what Rob didn't tell you, when we started recording at the famous record plant, at the same time, here we are, a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids, John Lennon's working on the Imagine album and the Who are working on Who's Next at the same time in the studio, in different rooms in the studio. So we were like kids in this psychedelic candy store. Well, Arnie Holland, this fella, ended up becoming a record executive, and he was very close to Bo and all of us. And when we all listened to the tape, Arnie's the one who said, well, you know, the record business is terrible, but one of the great things about the digital and internet age is there's infinite shelf space. I've got a distribution deal with EMI. I want to put this out. We're going to put this out. We're going to do whatever we can, you know, wherever it goes, it goes. And so all of a sudden this team kind of came back together again with no great plan. There is no, you know, like, you know, what's going to be next week or next month or next year. It's just kind of enjoying having people hear this music as best we can do that in, you know, just as yourself. You found out about it, and we're doing this tonight, and it's great. And thank you.
Rob,
cool.
Rob, I have to ask you, I love prog, and I could cheerfully talk about it for days on end. You're the keyboard guy. Why the piano rather than something more exotic?
Well, my main instrument in this particular group live was an electric piano. I used a Hohner pianette, which I still have. and if you watch The Beatles in Help, you'll see John Lennon out in the field. I forget the song, but he's playing this oddly shaped wooden electric piano. That's the Hohner pianette. It was made in Germany. They make the accordions and harmonicas as well. And that was my instrument of choice. It was the most portable, affordable thing I could get. When we went into the studio to do this, there was a grand piano, a regular piano, I guess, and the pianette, and also there was a Hammond organ. And I would pick one instrument. So throughout the album, I do play those three. So there's a little bit of Hammond, which I've, over the years, have become quite a collector of organs in particular. A lot of vintage organs, Lowry's, Hammond's, all kinds. We were on a tight budget. We had limited funds, limited equipment. Our band kind of predated synthesizers. I mean, you're talking 1969, 1970. And, you know, the electronic sounds, really all that was really around was I also had a Farfisa organ. And, you know, in the studio, again, it was a luxury to play a Hammond. So on the album, there are, you know, it's kind of equally divided between the acoustic piano, the electric piano, and the Hammond.
Actually, I had the wonderful opportunity to interview Keith Emerson a couple of years ago.
Yes, of course.
And believe it or not, the only weapon that he has not wrecked in his entire career is his original Moog synthesizer.
Wow.
It's alive and well. And
is that what he used on Lucky Man?
Yes. Yep.
But that was a tremendous sound.
Right. It's alive and well, and it lives in a recording studio in Los Angeles.
All right. Great.
Now, alas, the Hammond organs haven't fared nearly so well.
Yeah. Well, didn't he stab them with knives, among other things?
Oh, yeah, 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 knives, axes.
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We said, you know, we knew we arrived as a band in Philadelphia when one day we showed up to our rehearsal studio and everything was stolen. All our stuff was gone. You know, and you know, we had gotten an advance from the record company. We got new drums, new amps, you know. My beautiful, you know, 66 gold top Les Paul, everything gone. So we said, okay, guys, people know that Wax is in town, you know. So, you know, you keep going. It's funny now, you laugh.
I am laughing, but I'm sure at the time, you know, you were just going, oh, crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Now what are we going to do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you find something else and you go on, you know, and it's, you know, it's hard to think back to the reactions then, But, you know, something kept the music going, you know, until it was time for us to move on to different directions.
In fact, on that note, why don't we play another track? How does Nearer to God sound?
Sure. Yeah. It's another side of the album, and I think, again, if anyone's interested and you pick this record up, there's 10 tracks or 12 tracks, and everyone is quite different in feel, in style. So this was another influence, as Rick said, maybe the band. Certainly I was listening to Elton John at the time, and it's a little bit of our gospel, Philly soul, I guess.
Okay. Well, here is Wax playing Nearer to God.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to this, and I hate to say it, but it was completely different from On and On. I saw or heard very different musical influences. The beginning reminds me of Rick Wakeman. It's very Wakeman-esque. The middle part could almost have been Dave Cousins during his 2 weeks last summer bout. Very, very, very different song. What's your thought?
Well,
go ahead, Rick.
Well, I think as Rob said, we had a lot of material. We had a lot more material too, and there maybe some of that's on a tape somewhere. But I guess the stuff that we recorded on this live thing, we wanted to record as broad a spectrum of what Wax was at that given point in time, and also. Part of it was to show that what this band could do live, because as we started off this, the interview, Simon, there's not one overdub or one retake on this thing. This is what you hear is what the band sounded like. So, and also it's a great mood changer because there's a lot of really up stuff on the album, a lot of hard driving stuff. So to me, it just, I think as Rob put it, it was that side of us that was the kind of bluesy, gospely, the American, the American Southern kind of influence, that was probably as much a part of what we soaked up as we did the British, the British stuff at the time. So it was just maybe kind of an expression of a little bit more, I don't want to say gentle side, but a little bit more, mellow or spiritual or that kind of ballady side of us without being syrupy and sweet and stuff.
Okay, I need to do a shameless commercial here. Where can people buy the album?
Well, there's a couple ways. Of course, it's on iTunes, Amazon, under a Wax Melted, or they can go to the record company, which is lightyear.com, LIGHTYEAR, lightyear.com. And we have a great site that is continually being built as we're getting archival information. Our site is meltedwaxmusic.com. That's meltedwaxmusic.com. And we throw in a set of Ginsu knives and a Vegematic with every year.
You're not going to throw in... if you order within the next 20 minutes,
we'll bring it to your house. We'll bring it to your house.
Do you actually play any live gigs anymore?
Well, we've all moved on to different things. This is Rob here. I stayed in Philadelphia and partnered with Eric Bazillion, who Rick Levy mentioned before, and he and I formed the Hooters in the 80s, and that's now been, we just celebrated our 30th anniversary. We formed in 1980, and in 2010, as the Hooters, we are still performing more in Europe than in the States, actually. We play a lot in Germany in particular and Scandinavia over the years, and so in that group, we've written and recorded a number of albums. Rick has stayed active with a bunch of the bands that he's mentioned. Rick Chertoff, our drummer, has gone on to become a great producer and actually produced a number of the Hooters albums as well as other things we've worked on. He produced Cyndi Lauper's first album and Joan Osborne's Relish. So we've had a long and interesting history. We do perform in different groups and configurations, but we hadn't performed as Wax until this memorial service for our bass player, Bo. In October, I guess it was
End
of October, and that was literally the first time we had played since 1971.
Yep, yep. Yep, it was amazing. And yes, the question is being asked in almost every interview or something that we get: are we going to play? And the honest answer is, I think we don't know. You know, we didn't know any of this would happen a year ago, Simon. No, there was no clue that Bo being sick would bring this type of reconnection, this product, which is, you know, at whatever level, it's reaching people. We're getting, like, Young magazine, like a great review in the Big Takeover magazine, which is a very young audience magazine. Baby Sue, LMNOP, you know, these really young fan magazine, you know, young audience, and they're really digging this stuff. So,
oh my God,
there's
hope for us old guys.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
well,
music
maybe.
Is music. Music is music, you know. And so I don't think any of us even, you know, I'm sure we entertain it somewhere in our heads on different levels. Could we tour? Could we play? Could we do this? Of course we could if we really wanted to. But I don't think that's even part of the equation right now. I think it's just something
right.
that we'd let up to the fates to decide.
Add one thing to that, if I could. First of all, I'm not sure some of these songs we could play physically because it was really tricky. You know, to me and to anyone that discovers this music, it's really a virtual time capsule that we unearth. I mean, to hear a band at its peak go into a studio, record totally live, harmonies and all the things that were going on, and some of the music gets quite intense. For fans or you know, new fans, of to just hear what the early 70s was like, there's so much. Rick said it before, unedited. I love that word. You know, everything now is so produced and so thought over and worked on and tweaked and quantized and auto-tuned. This was a band that just went in with very minimal equipment. I mean, whatever we could scrounge together, the cheapest of the cheap in a way, recorded in a good studio with good equipment. So it really is, you can hear it. I mean, don't expect, you know, master studio sound, but it really sounds fine. And I think what really comes across is the performance. This is a band full of joy, full of energy, and full of ideas. So, Simon, you're right. Each song, it does sound different. There was no editing. There was really not really a producer. It was just us playing as much as we could in a couple of hours of studio time that we were given. Some songs 10, 12 minutes long that are very complex and with barely a mistake. I mean, we must have been rehearsing day and night.
I guess so,
and
yeah.
So it's really a time capsule and a look back at an age of music, specifically in Philadelphia, but of course it was happening worldwide. Five guys that came together with a million ideas bouncing off the walls and basically, if you're a fan of that or even not, if you just want to hear something unprocessed, raw, and energetic, then, you know, Wax is your choice.
It's apparent from the little bit of research that I've done, you know, the five of you, now four of you, you know, went your different ways. What directions did you all take?
Well, I think as Rob mentioned, he went with the Hooters, and he also wrote one of the great classic songs. Co-wrote one of the great classic songs of modern pop. Rob co-wrote "Time After Time" for Cindy Lauper.
Yes,
you know, what a magnificent piece of songwriting. I went into managing and promotion, mostly of the 60s pop rock artists that I ended up either playing with on the road and or managing. So that included Tommy Rowe, Herman's Hermits, the Box Tops with Alex Chilton, Freddie Cannon, Jay and the Techniques, for a short time, Bo Diddley. So that's what I did. And really, up until about 2 years ago, I was still doing that very full time. Probably about 100 dates a year. I've cut way back from that because the marketplace has really slowed down on that. But I think later this year, Tommy Rowe and I are going to be going to England for some dates. But that's kind of what I specialized in. And I also have a local band where I live. And we do, you know, a lot of garage rock and 60s frat party rock and stuff.
You kind of stole my thunder, you know, by mentioning Time After Time. that was going to be my very next port of call. It was actually quite amusing. I asked my wife, who likes all types of music as long as it involves country and or Western. Yeah. Oh, I took her to a Motley Crue concert and told her that they played country rock. She didn't speak to me for weeks. Anyway, where was I? I said to Jan, you know, what do you know about the band Wax? And she said, I know nothing. Never heard of them. And if it's, you know, if it's another deal, you know, with Motley Crue, I want nothing to do with it. And I said, no. These people are really good. Do you remember the song, Time After Time? And she said, oh, yeah, it's a great song. And I said, they wrote it. Well, they must be quite good.
Yeah, the band apparently, I mean, as time has reflected back, the band was, as Rob said, we burned really hot for a while, and we burned, and you know, the ascent was very fast, and the descent was very fast, but apparently it was an amazing training ground for all of us. It gave us all something, you know, whatever raw talent we had and whatever ability to communicate with each other and other musicians, I think it also gave us confidence to go for this, you know, crazy business for our whole lives, which is not for the faint of heart, you know, that's for sure.
No, it's not. I have to ask you, you know, what's in the future? I have this great plan. I'm sure you have PR people working on it. I think that what you need is to get Johnson & Johnson behind you, and you could do the Waxing the World tour.
we'll take all the help we can get.
We'll take all the ideas we can get. Now, you know what? You know what's really funny that you say that, though, because On and On, that the basic theme of On and On was used in 1971. 70 or 71, it was the first, obviously now that you're living in America, the National Football League used to have a TV show on every week called NFL Highlights. And it was back then it was a filmed show, and they'd pick a different team. Well, Wax was the first, and up till that time, the only rock and roll band to ever record a live score for one of those shows. They always used like canned, you know, just canned library music. Well, it so happened that the one of the heads of NFL Films was a big fan, used to come hear us. So On and On was actually used as the theme music for an NFL TV show back then. So, you know, there was like Rob says, well, you know, you don't know what may come, you know, out of the waxworks. You know, who would have expected this interview coming? You know, I mean, it's delightful. It really is delightful.
I am so glad that you have released this CD. I think it's wonderful. You know, things sit in the archives, maybe lost for forever, but no, you know, you have found it. It's out there. People can buy it. Life is great. My producer is whining in my ear that, okay, your time's up. Get off the air. I'd love to get your parting thoughts.
Rob, go ahead, here, Rob. And I would like to give Rick a lot of credit. It was really Rick's energy and enthusiasm all the way back when this band was put together. And it was his friend Bo since high school. They played, as he mentioned, in a band since the 60s. And I know that bond was especially strong for him. But it's just, for me, being a musician some 40 or more years now, and we've all done this since we were kids, literally seeing the Beatles changed our lives, like millions of kids around the world, especially in this country. We said, this is what we want to do. Rick was right. It's not for the faint of heart, but we made a go at it. And many of us in the group, whether on the management side, producing, writing, playing, we've all stayed in music since 1970. It's incredible. And I think it proves that things can happen in your life out of left field that you really don't know or can't even imagine. And this was a part of our time that is long gone, and it lives on in our brains, but we really didn't know how physical and tangible it would be until we lost our bass player and heard this music and actually reunited several months ago to play. And it was almost like getting on that bike again and riding. It came so quickly to us. Yeah. To get together in a group and play these songs after 40 years. So on a personal level, I've done a lot of great things in my career. I've been very fortunate. The Hooters opened Live Aid in Philadelphia. We played at the Wall in Berlin. We've had monumental shows and great success. But on a musical level, I think this is as satisfying and exciting as anything that I've ever been involved with, to have it was such a pivotal moment in our lives. When you're 18, 19 years old, on your own, playing in a rock and roll band, that's all you're living for day and night. That's what this music and that's what this album is about. So if anybody's interested, meltedwaxmusic.com, you'll hear some energy and some musical ideas floating around that are very special. So that's my take. Go ahead, Rick. And
well, Rob,
by the way.
No, I can't say any. I can't say any more. And I do. I do thank you. And you know, and to me, the promotion end of it, it's what I kind of morphed into. I love it, especially when I believe in something. And that's always been kind of my. You know, I couldn't just go, promote some junky thing that I didn't like. I mean, all the 60s guys I work with, I love 60s pop music. But the same thing with this. This was a moment that, the fact that however many thousands, millions of people are hearing this stuff now, and over the coming months. And, I mean, there's no timeline. Like, we've got to, get this out so far in so many months. It's just a great experience. And Rob is exactly right. Coming together and playing it, we've all done big things, but on the pure level of music and emotion, it was humbling and it was really honest. And when you get to that level of music, after playing for so many years in so many situations, you have one of those aha moments. Oh, this is why I started doing this. This is why I became a musician. And what a great feeling to have, man. You wish you could have that all the time, but... to have it a few times is okay. Yeah, so that's my kind of feeling. And Rob's right. Check the website. Pick up download some tracks. It's so easy to do that now. And I think people are really, really like it. Now, I'll be, like I said, Simon, when you hear the whole thing, it'll be great to have another discussion with you sometime. It's great.
Oh, and you can plan on it.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Thank
great.
You, Simon.
Great.
We really appreciate your time and energy and help getting this music heard.
I really want to thank you both, Rick and Rob. You've taken time out to talk to me. I really want to see this CD be a huge, huge success. And a tribute to Bo.
That's
yes,
a beautiful thought. And have yourself a Merry Crimble here in the USA.
Right. Okay. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great day. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.